Now, that was wonderful, except I did work on this sermon. So I do appreciate your staying. At the age of 24 years old, I was a fresh student of theology, and I was browsing the seminary bookstore in Hyde Park at the Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago, and I discovered the author and theologian Carl Friedrich Buechner. Buechner was born in 1926 in New York, and he was ordained a Presbyterian minister. He authored some 36 books, was nominated for a Pulitzer in literature, and among my favorites of his books is Wishful Thinking, a Theological ABC. Grace, writes Friedrich Buechner, is something you can only be given. There's no way to earn it or deserve it or bring it about any more than you can deserve the taste of raspberries and cream or bring about your own birth. There is nothing you have to do. There is nothing you have to do. There is nothing you have to do. Okay, well, that's nice, that's affirming, but being given grace didn't mean as much to me until I understood how deeply I could be hurt and how I could hurt others. It was Buechner's reflective piece on guilt that made me pause now. For at the fresh age of 58 years old, I have a longer view. Now I can see how ribbons of guilt and forgiveness and grace intertwine. How the brokenness and the pain in my family was a legacy carried on by me, and how grace-filled moments guided me in the ways that Mary Oliver described, such as, you knew what you had to do, though their melancholy was terrible. And her phrase, there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own. And this phrase, you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to save the only life you could save. Your own. Alcoholism. That's what was handed down in my family, from my grandfather to my father. In the early years, my dad was funny and affectionate, a successful businessman on the south side of Chicago. But the alcohol did its work, increasing the alienation between he and my mother. As she became more shrill and demanding and frantic for some connection, some intimacy with him, he withdrew, drinking at a local bar. Mom would have me call to speak with the owner. I was maybe 10. Hi, Mr. LoCascio. Please tell my dad to come home. Mom says we're all waiting for him before we can eat dinner. My parents' dance of submerged rage. Over and under functioning, and the rules for behavior in public, which included cover up the drinking and the rule of don't tell family secrets, played out in the endless, dismal variations that Buechner refers to in his writing on guilt. As the eldest child, I was the good girl. If you know alcoholic literature, that made me the hero child. I was the one who did no alcohol or drugs through high school and most of college until, as a senior, my boyfriend convinced me to try a beer. I was the firstborn. I was the most wanted baby. And I knew I was loved by my family. And I grew up in a Christian church, a Lutheran church. And I was taught and I accepted the concept of being a recipient of God's grace. Undeserved. But none of that stopped me from marrying a man who was an alcoholic. It was downright scary to see the legacy of my parents' dance of the undeserving, become the dance of my own life. Even as I scrambled to help my husband and scrambled in my own efforts to be a faithful and patient and Christian and strong woman, I was sinking into fear and lower self-esteem. As I saw myself as undeserving of respect and of a healthy relationship. So there I was in the cycle of guilt, self-sabotaging. Perhaps you've been more fortunate in your life. Good sneeze. But I do ask you to consider, in what ways have you self-sabotaged or undermined genuine grace-filled moments for love, grasping for or simply falling back into familiar habits and the psychological pushes and pulls of deeply entrenched family patterns or legacies that alienate and distance you or wound you and others? And how was it? How is it that grace-filled loving intervenes to redeem us, to transform us? I'm going to divert here just a smidge from my story to a gospel story. That one from the book of John, chapter 7 through chapter 8, verse 10. You'll all remember this one as soon as I say it. It's the one about the woman taken in adultery. The crowd, among them the leaders and the scribes and the Pharisees, had the intent to kill her, to stone her. And there was Jesus, writing in the dust. I imagine when he said, "He who is without sin cast the first stone," it was not a vitriol of shaming and blaming. It was a moment of grace, interrupting a vicious cycle of guilt. As those gathered acknowledged their own pride and their capacity to wound and be wounded, grace intervened and the cycle stopped. The angry mob dispersed, and the shamed woman, who was not punished, but was seen by Jesus, truly seen for who she was, and loved, in that moment, she was able to begin to trust herself. That's kind of how I feel it happened with me. How grace intervened to redeem and transform me. Not by Jesus. But I'm going to credit three grace-filled moments. Now, I say moment kind of in the way that you'll hear Tillich says moment, a moment of grace. But I'm not referring to a short interval of time necessarily, but to grace revealing itself in a stretch of my life. Although, when you think about it, all of our lives are simply a moment in time, a fragment. So, three grace-filled moments. Number one, my therapist, Mary Eideren, my Jesus. She told me it was not my job to save my husband, and not my fault that I could not save my parents. It was my job to save myself. And part of that saving was that I became a therapist myself. The second grace-filled moment. Reading and integrating the existentialist philosopher Paul Tillich, who is regarded as one of the most influential theologians of the 20th century. He wrote a sermon titled, "You Are Accepted," published in his book of sermons entitled, "The Shaking of the Foundations," which was released in 1948. The sermon is based on Paul's letter to the Romans, "But where sin abounded, grace did much more abound." Tillich suggests that sin is best understood as estrangement or separation from others, from ourselves, and from our source or our ground of being. Grace then is a reunion with ourself and our grounding that leads to a reunion with others. We can't make it happen, and we're not even sure when or if it will happen. Tillich wrote, "Grace strikes when we are in great pain or restlessness. It strikes when we walk through a dark valley of meaninglessness or emptiness. It strikes when we feel the separation is deeper than usual because we have violated another life or we have been estranged. It strikes when year after year the longed-for perfection does not come, and when the old compulsions reign within us as they have for decades, and when moments of despair destroy our courage. Sometimes a wave of light breaks into that darkness, and if it happens, we experience grace. After such an experience, we may not be better than before. We may not even believe any more than before. And yet, everything is transformed." I held on to Tillich somewhere deep inside. And grace experience number three is my lived experience of grace. Because for 10 years, I was estranged from my dad. It was due to a lot of things. My mom had died, 2 brain aneurysms, and then a horrible bout of cancer. And then I fell in love with a woman. That was wonderful. And I became a Unitarian Universalist, and that was wonderful. But it was just too much for my conservative family. And the family alcoholism and the family judgments were just too much for me. So many years passed, 10 years of estrangement. But then there was some healing, and our relationship was a fragile thing. My dad still refused help, and still an alcoholic, he fell, and the doctors would not let him return home. So here is my closing. Imagine my father sits in a wheelchair in his room at a nursing home in DeKalb. He had congestive heart failure and horribly swollen legs with sores. But the staff and I were really hopeful that he would do well. A few days earlier, I had loaded his things and driven him from Chicago, from the facility there myself, because he refused ambulance transport. "Too expensive," he barked. The ride in the sunshine had been bliss for him, and I remember that. I visited him. Days later, I combed his hair, I unpacked more items, I bundled up some of his laundry to take home and said, "Dad, I've got to go. I have work I need to do." He asked me then to fix the TV, then get a magazine, then just one more thing, then another one more thing. And I said, "Dad, I've really got to go." "Fine, go," he snapped. "I've got this work to do," I said. As I gathered up my purse and my jacket and his laundry and my keys, and I made my way to the door, and just as I was about gone, he yelled out, "I love you!" With that angry, crabby tone. Oh, but I didn't care. And you know what? I was really angry and frustrated then, too. So I shouted back, "Well, I love you, too!" It was not a sweet exchange, but it was graceful. It's one of my most cherished moments. And a few days later, he died. And I miss him. I may not be better than before. I may not even believe more deeply, but everything is transformed because the cycle of guilt and shame are broken. I own the truth that I am deserving because grace was shared in that cranky, irritable, frazzled moment of shouted love. And so it is that we are cherished. And so it is that grace comes.